I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and DeGenevieve. A new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
The Washington Post, Dave, just mandated vaccines as a condition of employment for their employees.
Now that's a mandate.
Yeah.
Either you get the vaccine or you're fired. That is a mandate.
And we're expecting President Biden today to announce whether he will require federal workers to be vaccinated.
It's 9:05. It's time for the launch.
Sequence engaged.
And here are three things that Debbie wants you to know.
Countdown. Three.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in town. I want to ask Boyd Matheson, who was there as DeSantis was speaking, if I mistook the governor's speech for a presidential campaign address.
So over the last year, Florida chose freedom over Fauciism.
Freedom over Fauciism. Yeah, that's right. He's a top contender for the White House among Republicans. We're going to dive into a new poll. I can't believe he's behind Donald Trump. Junior. That's right. The son. I'm not surprised, though, where Liz Cheney lands on this poll.
Countdown.
We're going to have a live update in the 10 o'clock hour on a parking lot road rage incident that went down in Centerville. We covered it earlier this week, Dave. Remember, it went from the Walmart parking lot to the Target parking lot, according to police. And cops say a guy that was driving an F-150 told them that a guy driving a Mitsubishi Lancer had followed him, pointed a gun at him and his kids who were in the truck. So he ran over the Lancer guy. Well, at 10 o'clock when cops call the show, we're going to ask them to reveal what was really captured on surveillance cameras in the area.
First of all, if you're ever telling anybody a story, just assume somebody has video to prove or disprove what just happened. And that's exactly what happened. There was surveillance video. They know exactly what happened. And guess what? It was the exact opposite of the tale he told. It wasn't him being chased and he was defending his kids and a gun was drawn. We'll give you all the details.
Launch countdown one.
We've had so many flash floods hitting Utah, one right after the other. I needed a little bit of that rain over my house last night. But it certainly is, Dave, warming my heart to see neighbors helping neighbors, you know, pulling cats and couches out of water-filled basements. But it makes me sick to read that volunteers are now falling ill. We're about to learn what lurks in floodwaters, and it makes me wonder, do I want to help?
Anything you can do to get out of work, that's what I'm looking for, right? No, this is something I hadn't really thought about, that once you go into those floodwaters, as you're trying to help that neighbor clean out that basement, what is lurking in that water looks to be making volunteers sick.
Dave and Janovic.
The launch.
Commence.
Utah's top local story. Special coverage with Dave and Janovic.
Look, I'm no meteorologist, Dave, but you remember a time when there's been this many flash flood warnings?
No.
One right after the other. We've had so many of them lately. Last night, Moab got hit really hard. And then earlier this week, Cedar City got hit hard. Roads were flooded. Cars were flooded out. Basements and even the college dorms at Southern Utah University got flooded. In fact, we talked to somebody who was driving through the flood zone earlier this week.
We just thought that was all coming. Something had broken, like a dam had broken, you know, up in the mountains or something like that, where that much water. I'd never seen that much water.
And so now there's this new twist. We caught this story on Fox13.com, and we're going to dive into it ourselves. They're reporting that volunteers are falling ill after helping with the cleanup.
Yes, that surprised me. I knew the flash floods caused damage. You know about the mudslides. Cars can get swept away. I really didn't think about something happening to the volunteers. You know, after mm-hmm. the floodwaters had subsided and you go in to clean up, well, looks like some of these floodwaters are getting volunteers sick.
So in Cedar City, we see this video of people swimming through the floods. The water is so deep, Dave, that people are swimming through the floods to get to basements. In fact, one guy, I see video of him handing a cat that had lived through this out of a basement window. And so this Fox 13 report says his family saw what was happening, like a lot of people do. Neighbors helping neighbors in Utah. It's a thing here. His family sees it. They drive over to help, you know, volunteer to, you know, get couches and cats and whatever else out of basements and help people whose homes are, you know, underwater. And now this mom says her daughter and other family members feel really ill, and they started feeling ill the next day. In fact, quote, the daughter has had a high fever and that she's been shaky and nauseated.
In about 8 minutes, we're going to have a live interview with a doctor to find out more. And is this specific to what's happening in Moab, or in general, do these floods that people are trying to clean up, do they carry some grossness?
Cedar City, Moab, what goes on? So I did a Google search this morning. I thought, let's do some research on this. There's not a lot on the web about it. That's why I'm looking forward to our conversation with this doctor in just a few minutes. Because I saw kids' toys floating down streets. When I was watching this video in Cedar City, I'm like, ugh, okay.
Can you clean those up?
NBC affiliate in Florida did a story on this. Of course, Florida gets, you know, a lot of, you know,
floods,
hurricanes. And they said floodwaters can contain, you ready for this? Have you had your breakfast yet?
Yeah.
Fecal matter from sewage systems.
Little sewage backup.
Yeah, and industrial waste. And in fact, I went to the CDC website to see if they warn about this. And here's what they say. Hey, if you're in floodwaters and you're helping and volunteering, it can cause wounds to get infected, skin rashes, gastrointestinal illnesses, and tetanus.
Well, you know, if you have an open wound, you're not supposed to go into the ocean.
I didn't know that.
You're not supposed to.
I did not know that.
And it's not just because the sharks can smell you from a mile away. It's not the sharks.
How do you know this?
I am an ocean expert. I don't know. I read it somewhere. But, it's because the ocean has a lot of contaminants.
Okay.
There's a lot of grossness in that water. Sure. So if you have an open wound, it can get infected.
Oh, okay.
The salt water doesn't necessarily, you know, disinfect that wound for you. But it makes sense that these floodwaters that just come in and they just pick up everything along the way would just be very, very gross.
Yeah. Does it make you not want to volunteer?
Quite frankly, yes.
Really?
Well, it makes me hesitate and say, you know what, I'm not going to help until I get ready, unless it's an emergency situation, right?
If saving a life.
If you're trying to save a sweet little puppy or a kitty cat or a life, yeah, I mean, you're going to jump in and you'll deal with the sickness later.
I'm surprised you said that, because usually you're like automatic. You're just on autopilot with this stuff.
I've never put on like the special boots or the waders or anything before.
Oh, I wonder if there's gear that we can wear that would protect us from fecal matter. Let's ask.
How many times are you going to say that in this segment? The sewage backup system, the fecal matter just floating around in these waters.
Before we discovered this today, would you have volunteered without thinking twice?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Because I never would have thought about this. And again, in an emergency situation, and who hasn't been in a basement that is flooded or something
like
that?
I had sewer backup in my... in my basement.
Debbie, your obsession with the sewer today.
It was a few years ago. Thankfully, I was out of town. And
you pawned it off on another neighbor?
No, very close relatives of mine jumped into action and cleaned.
An ex-husband? Because that's a bonus. That's actually that's a blessing in disguise.
As a matter of fact, yes. Okay, straight ahead. Let's get that doctor on the line. He's calling the show next to explain to us what is exactly in these waters that make us sick when we're helping people when flash floods hit, and also is there something that we can wear to protect ourselves from the fecal matter.
Utah's top local story, special coverage with Dave and Dujanovic.
I had no idea that floodwaters could be contaminated to the point it could make us sick. Lots of people volunteering to help with all these flash floodings, and people clean up their basements, and you know the dorms at Southern Utah University were flooded out. And according to a Fox 13 news report, a family has said, "Hey, we felt ill after this. Just don't feel well at all. Fever, nausea. No clue."
Which surprises me because for all the years we've kind of been just diving into service, you don't really think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really aware of your surroundings. When trees fall over, do you know what is underneath those leaves? I mean, it could be a down power line. There's a lot of things that we don't think of, but we're so eager to help, we just jump in. And this is something I'd never heard of. I've never thought of. It makes total sense that this water, this flood water, is contaminated and it's gross and that it could make you sick. It makes sense. I just had never thought about it.
I think we need to find out if there's a way to help and keep ourselves safe at the same time. There's very little that I found about this on the internet. There's an NBC affiliate in Florida that did a story very recently. They had some flooding there in Florida. They have a lot of flooding in Florida, but they said that floodwaters may contain fecal matter from sewage systems, some industrial waste.
We know, Debbie, we know where the fecal matter comes from. We know it comes from sewage systems. It's not just running in the streets. All right. No, please, let's continue. It's our new drinking game. Every time we say fecal matter, Diet Coke. Sorry.
There's a CDC warning about it, too. You know, who knew? Wound infections can happen, skin rash, gastrointestinal illnesses, and tetanus. So we wanted to bring on somebody who knows a lot more about this than either, you know, myself or Dave Noriega. Dr. Brian, and I'm going to say your name wrong, but I'm going to say it Munch. Is that right?
Well, it's close. Nobody ever gets it right.
Minch.
It's pronounced Minch.
Minch. Dave got it right. Yeah. You're the president of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. So,
yes. So
tell us what might be lurking in these flash floodwaters that we're seeing in, particularly in southern Utah, that is making volunteers sick or might be making volunteers sick.
Well, we want people to be good Samaritans, but at the same time, we also want them to be smart and able to protect themselves. And people need to assume that all floodwaters are contaminated unless proven otherwise. So among the things that these floodwaters are typically contaminated with are all the things you'd expect from situations where a sewage or a water purification system has been disrupted. And so that includes things like E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, viruses, like things that may cause diseases like hepatitis. And in fact, now during the pandemic, unfortunately, we also know that it may be a source of transmission of COVID. So there are a wide variety of pathogens that people need to be aware of. And they need to be aware of particularly that they can be exposed to this through their skin. especially if there's an abrasion or a break in their skin, that can be an invitation to a systemic infection. And oftentimes people don't get sick immediately, but they may get sick several days later, maybe as much as 7 to 10 days later.
I wouldn't have thought that it would have shown up so many days later. I would have thought, you'd maybe be sick immediately, but that it shows up later is fascinating.
Well, that can be whatever sort of disease may be transmitted this way. That can be quite variable in its onset. People need to also understand that the skin is the largest organ in the body and can absorb an awful lot of toxins, even things like air pollution. But so people need to be careful and try and minimize their exposure as much as possible as they're diving in to help people out. There are other contaminants, too, in many situations, and they could be chemical toxins, things like pesticides and oil products. There are a whole host of industrial toxins that are typically in floodwaters in urban areas. So it's a very toxic brew, and people need to understand that the threats to them are significant and they're widespread, and they really need to take precautions, and they especially need to make sure that their kids do not view this as some opportunity to play in it.
Well, that's the thing. When it rains, kids just want to run out and play in the rain. And these are particularly, some of these roads are running like rivers, so it could be very dangerous that way as well. But these floods are particularly deep, Doctor. I mean, they're talking, several feet deep.
Yeah.
Does that increase the contamination level?
Well, what it can do, it can also contaminate nearby water wells. So people who are in the same area need to have their water tested, even if they weren't obviously affected. That can contaminate nearby water wells and cause, obviously, public health problems down the road. Other things to consider is a lot of people's pets may end up in this water, and then people may not think, well, the pet is now contaminated. And their children will go hug that pet and play with it, and they may end up later on playing on all the surfaces that the water was in contact with, both the ground and surfaces on structures, walls, floors, and so forth. And the residue left from these floodwaters can also leave residual concentrations of these toxins. So it's a much bigger issue than people realize.
Just fascinating me with this conversation. I had not, you think about it logically and it makes complete and total sense, but to think of the chemical toxins that are in there in addition to the natural things that are going on in that water. So what happens if we can't avoid it, if we were helping, do you just get out and basically throw your clothes away and shower off and clean off?
If somebody's life is immediately at stake, i.e. if they're drowning and they need to be rescued, yes, you jump in and you do what you have to do to save lives. But if it's not a situation that is that dire, pause and take a minute and think about this water is heavily contaminated with a wide variety of toxins. And so what am I going to do to decrease my chance of getting sick from them? So that should include things like rubber boots, rubber pants, rubber gloves. And then once you do get exposed, take advantage of the first opportunity to wash your hands thoroughly and take a shower thoroughly and change your clothes. We know that, in fact, that the toxins can saturate a person's clothes such that long after they leave, if they leave those clothes on, the skin can continue to absorb these toxins from the saturation of their clothes.
Just in 30 seconds, Doctor, just tell us what some of the symptoms are if we've been helping people, clean out their basements and been exposed to floodwaters that are contaminated.
Well, there's a lot of variability, and it depends on the toxins that are present. But typically what people will end up feeling are exactly what this family started feeling in Cedar City, which is headaches, malaise, body aches, and in a couple of cases, fevers, chills. And that's usually the first clue. And it may happen immediately, like it did with this family, but it may not happen for a week or even as long as 10 days later.
Dr.
So
Mintz,
those are the things to look for.
We appreciate that insight. Great conversation. And Debbie, I feel a little dumb that I didn't know this, because everything Dr. Mintz said makes all the sense in the world. It seems pretty obvious, but our immediate reaction when we do have, you know, one of these floods is jump in there and start cleaning up. Well, there's a reason why there's professionals that do this kind of stuff, because they know about this. They know how to do it safely. And sometimes it's not worth it to just jump in to save a couch.
All the times, you just make me laugh sometimes. All the times I've had a flooded basement, which is quite a few times,
yeah,
I've never put rubber boots on.
No.
Ever.
You slosh through it.
In tennis shoes.
Yep.
And then I squirt them off in the backyard and I slosh into work in my tennis shoes. Yeah, I'm going to get rubber boots. I'm going to get some other, you know, protective gear like you talked about, just in case my basement backs up again.
Dave and Dejanovic.
We had a fascinating conversation right out of the gates this morning about flash flooding and how floodwaters can make you ill if you're volunteering to help your neighbors after a flash flooding event. We had Dr. Brian Mintz on the line with us. He's president of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Here's what he told us.
E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, virus-like things that may cause diseases like hepatitis. And in fact, now during the pandemic, unfortunately, we also know that it may be a source of transmission of COVID.
It's super gross. That water, I hadn't really thought about it, because whenever we have one of these tragedies, in being in the news business, we show up at all of them. We see all the family members and the friends that are just piling out and helping and diving into the water and rescuing kittens, doing all of this. And I hadn't really thought about what's in that water. And it's pretty gross, and you can get pretty sick.
Because the flash floods are coming from all over. It could be sewage in the water, any number of things. Let's get Michelle Fogg on the line. Good morning, Michelle.
Hello.
You volunteered with your family in helping earlier this week in Cedar City with all those floods there.
Yeah, that's right.
Were you in the floodwaters with your family?
Yeah, we just saw it on Facebook and drove around, found the place where the apartment was flooded, and, you know, the waters had gone down, but people were in kind of scooping stuff up and filling bags, and we just jumped in the water with everyone else and just started scooping stuff up. And then at some point people kind of left and we were there, and we helped people kind of siphon the water out. We were holding screens and kind of keeping the muck from clogging the siphoning, and the fire department wasn't there yet. And, you know, we were in that water for a couple hours, my daughter, my son, we were there trying to help with the cleanup. And then, you know, the next day we didn't feel very well. And progressively my daughter kind of, you know, she got fevers and sick. And I look back and I'm like, you know, this wasn't life or death. We were on cleanup and standing in water. And my daughter has eczema and things like that, that, you know, it seeped into her system, I think, and she got sick. And I just thought, you know, we should have thought ahead. We just kind of jumped in. It wasn't, you know, life or death at that point. And there was just standing water, and it was gross, and there was lots of apartments, and you know, I just think we should have thought ahead. You know, do we just jump in when we don't have the appropriate gear, kind of thing?
Yeah. No, I listened to this story, and I'll tell you, Michelle, thank you, first of all, for being awesome. And I'm sorry. I never would have thought of that, because we do this. It's very common. You see a problem, you want to fix it, you jump right in. But logically, it makes all the sense in the world that that water would be very gross. You know, I have all sorts of toxins in there, whether it's chemicals, fertilizer, gasoline, sewage. I mean, you start thinking about it logically and it makes a ton of sense. Do you think this will change your behavior in the future? Because that's kind of sad, too. I mean, because you're doing a good thing, you're being a good Samaritan, but do you kind of risk the health hazards?
Yeah, I think next time I would think, especially with my kids, you know, not letting them jump right in, and I shouldn't have either. It was just cleanup efforts. And then the fire department showed up, and they had this big hose, and they, you know, they had all the equipment. So if it was life or death, you know, if it was, like you said, if it was a kitten or if it was people and stuff like that, I would, it's worth the risk probably. But at that point, we just kind of, you know, just probably didn't think ahead. And I don't think I would do it again. I think I would kind of wait and see what the fire department or someone from CERT told us to do and help in that way. But yeah, I don't think jumping in the water in a situation where it's not life or death was worth it. I think, you know, you kind of wait for instructions from the professionals and let them take over.
Michelle Fogg is a mom. She was in Cedar City with her kids and jumped into action when trying to help the folks down in Cedar City, you know, scoop out floodwaters from their basements. Before we let you go, Michelle, I'm so grateful that you responded to my message on Facebook this morning and then texted me. I really do appreciate you getting back to us. We want to know how your daughter's doing and how old she is.
She's almost 12, and she's doing better. She's much better today, but you know, I thought, you know, if she's still bad, then we're going, you know, to seek medical care. But I don't know. She looks okay, but it was visibly that she was seriously sick. So,
we appreciate you doing it. We appreciate, you know, that you pitched in. Sorry, your daughter got sick. I guess, you know, maybe she's building up the immune system now, glass half full. But Michelle Fogg, thanks for joining us.
We want to jump out quickly now to, we got a live phone call right now from the mayor of Moab. They had tremendous flooding in the Moab area last night. Mayor Emily Niehaus on the line with us right now. How are the conditions down there, Mayor?
Well, I'll tell you, we are known for our whitewater recreation on the Colorado River, but last night we were watching rivers flow throughout the city. It was like class 2 whitewater down our streets. It was pretty epic, and the muddy water really did some damage. We're still assessing kind of private property. Who all was impacted the worst, but the biggest fear is that last night's storm that did, you know, quite a bit of damage, but it's not the last of it, but we're going to have a pretty heavy monsoon season, I think, this year, and we're expecting more rain tonight. So I want to say thank you to everyone that has reached out to me and the Moab community. How can they help? I don't know if you've had Mayor Julie Fulmer from Vineyard on the on your show yet, but she coordinated in Utah County to get sandbags delivered to her, and she has actually deployed a team that's bringing down to Moab 25,000 sandbags and down to Cedar City 25,000 sandbags to help us out.
Shout out to the mayor of Vineyard in Utah County.
Yeah.
People helping
Julie
people.
Fulmer, she's incredible.
So what's the plans? Because obviously you have cleanup right now, but you expect something in the future. What parts of Moab are being hardest hit by these flash floods?
Well, that's what's so difficult. So we have two creeks that actually run through Moab that confluence with the Colorado River, the Mill Creek and the Pack Creek. And remember, we had a pretty major fire a few weeks ago up in Pack Creek and up into the mountains. And so what we're seeing with some of the flooding is fire debris coming down from the mountain. And just this past weekend, Sunday night, there was a localized storm just over the Pack Creek area that brought a lot of just black fire debris down through Moab and into the Colorado. This storm last night was more concentrated away from the Pack Creek area and in the Mill Creek flood flood area, and so we just saw a lot more flooding in the, you know, along the streets of Malibu as opposed to in the creeks. But that's the thing with the monsoon season and the rains. You never know where they're going to localize, and you never really know what you're going to get. And so we are encouraging residents right now to get their sandbags today and to put them out and just prepare for monsoon season. And we've got our football team at 1 o'clock today. They're going to be filling sandbags for residents that can come get them at the city ball fields, the west entrance of our city ball fields. The community is really coming together. Water is like what we need for life, but it also can be the most damaging thing in the West. So we're just trying to get prepared.
Mayor of Moab, Emily Niehaus, thank you so much for jumping on the line with us. And we're going to make sure we pass along the information that we learned about the folks who are saying they got sick from the floodwaters and the volunteering that they did in the Cedar City area along to the mayor of Moab in case she missed that part of the conversation. All of this information podcasted on your favorite podcast platform and also available today at KSLNewsRadio.com.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.